Welcome to the Inspired Teacher's Guide podcast. We are Kim Wilkins and Laura Wooldridge, just two teachers trying to podcast. We are so glad that you've joined us.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back.
Hi, everybody.
It's another week.
Okay, listeners. So if you've been with us the past 2 weeks, fantastic. Thank you very much. If you haven't, welcome back. We have been studying some of the work from Brené Brown. And our studying has been from her book called Atlas of the Heart. And we are focusing on the section at the back of the book about cultivating meaningful connections. And it's been so good. Like, I just keep rereading and rereading and rereading the section. There are three skills that she says will really help us build meaningful connections. And it's, you know, Kim and I thought about this for the podcast because, I mean, what is the foundation of a successful teacher? And it's all about, you know, those great, great relationships. Hold on.
That's true. And I loved her definition of what the connection is.
Yeah. Will you share that? Because I'll just take it in again.
Yes. It's the energy that exists between people when they feel seen, heard, and valued, when they can give and receive without judgment, and this is probably my favorite part, when they derive sustenance and strength from the relationship. Mm-hmm. So you have to be seen and heard before you can derive sustenance and strength from the relationship. And you can give and receive without judgment. So you feel safe. It's a very safe place.
Right.
And you're just better because of it.
Absolutely. So we thought this would be just so good for us to study and focus on the podcast, because relationships are so crucial to our life at home, at school, and everywhere we go. So if this piques your interest, I cannot encourage you enough to dig into this work. It's been crazy. I've been doing a Bible study at church on 1 John, or 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, but we've just been focusing on 1 John right now. And the overlap between what we've been studying and this. And then I've been listening to some work by Kelly Corrigan, You're Getting It for Your Birthday. I'll just go ahead. Oh. So don't order the book. Okay. It's called Tell Me More. And she tells stories, and the stories highlight 12 things that she has to tell herself and teach herself over and over, and that she would tell others. And the overlap between that, I'm just like, whoa, apparently I'm needing to learn these lessons because everything I'm reading goes back to this.
That's so great.
It is great. Okay, let's review really quick. So the three skills that will help us build those connections that Kim described are grounded confidence. And you can think about grounded confidence as just always learning and improving, staying curious about the way you respond, all those things, you know, not throwing up our armor, but staying open to exploring opportunities. And especially, guys, when you're building up that grounded confidence, when you get into a situation that is uncertain or you're not responding right, et cetera, if the way that we show grounded confidence is to think about how we're feeling and reacting and be open to exploring it.
Well, that's a tough one for me, Laura.
When it is.
When things feel shaky and uncertain, I hole up. I just want to hunker down and not stay open. And I don't practice courage, and I don't rumble with vulnerability. I don't want to be vulnerable. I don't like that feeling. And I imagine that as human beings, we're probably all like that. So we put a shield around us.
Oh yeah. That's definitely the armor and I think I do the same thing, Kim. It's like, I'll just be quiet, you know, mm-hmm. or I might be talking, but my heart is quiet because I've built up the walls around it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, really being bold and talking and staying calm, I think is a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we don't want to create more issues
when
we're rumbling.
Mm-hmm. I think it's real important for people to, when you're going through tough times, if you don't have a person that's in your life that you can talk to openly, to find a therapist that you can talk to. And even then, it's real easy for me to pretend like everything's okay. I'm doing great. I'm so good. And my therapist told me that when she saw me turn a corner, when I turned off talking about everybody else in my circle and then started sharing about myself. Yeah. Yeah. But I talked about this before. I had just grief counseling with losing my parents so quickly. And it really does help. But that vulnerability it's really tough for me because I was raised to, you know, just
suck it up.
Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You put on a smile, you hold your head up, and you go.
Right.
You push forward. And that is true. That is true. But at some point, you have to be real. Mm-hmm. About how you're feeling, because it's going to come out somewhere. The body keeps the score.
And I think the longer that we do hold it in, the more we pay for it. And maybe others do too.
Oh, I think so too. Yeah, for sure.
The second skill that she shares is the practicing the courage to walk alongside someone. And she's really, that kind of sounds wordy, but you know, she says that means to be others focused, serving others by connecting, being compassionate, empathetic, and non-judgmental. And this was a big one that really links into today's, which is the third principle, and that is called story stewardship. And the way that you can summarize that to be simplistic is honoring people's stories as sacred. Like, and I thought this one was just fantastic.
Me too.
Okay. So when we're, and I mentioned this last week, when we think about honoring someone's story, and I just think about all what kids come in to our classrooms, they've got so many stories that they want to tell us. But I think probably the main stories are probably the stories that they don't end up sharing, or it's late in the year when they really start to feel very comfortable with us. And so I was thinking, I was rereading this, just coming off of a junior high track meet where I saw lots of kiddos, and I'm thinking about them as I'm reading it. And I was thinking about how many, if I just sat in that big group of kids the other night and really showed that I was there to listen, probably how much I could have gotten out of them just by being a girl off the street. And so I was just thinking, and this is combining with that Kelly Corrigan stuff I've been reading, that the more we can show we can truly listen, we will be honoring people's stories.
Mm-hmm.
That was
so just giving them an opportunity to be open.
Yes.
Not try to fill in the empty space with words.
And not fit it in our box. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that I've noticed in these three pillars of creating meaningful connections, is as we're doing these skills and practicing them, because like you and I, we armor up, we shut down, and it's going to take a lot of practicing to undo that habit. That I can't remember what I was saying. What was it, Kim?
About not filling in, about not fitting it in others' box, others' story into our box.
Mm-hmm. That's the connection I've seen over this is Brené will say something that gets in the way of all these is shaping people's emotions and experiences into what we know.
Mm.
And instead of being letting it be true.
Right. Yeah. Just it is what it is.
It is what it is. I'm just going to bring up this Kelly Corgan stuff a lot right now because it was just so profound what I was reading yesterday. She said that she was going through a lot of stuff. She had a meditation. She worked in California and she was working in a startup. And so they had like kombucha bars and nap pods, all the, you know, the stuff that you hear about that Google and Apple do. And they had a meditation teacher come in once a day and she would go to the classes when she could handle it. And she said to him one day, she said, you know, I just act shocked. Like I just lose it on daily stuff. And I was thinking about like in the mornings are kind of rough for us at the Woldridge house. And I'm shocked every morning that we're running late. I'm shocked every morning that the boys don't want to get out. You know, like, and the guy said, oh, you are a person, as she talked more to him, he said, oh, you're a person that thinks that you can control other people's behavior and you can change them. She said, or, you know, she kind of took it hard. And he said, you are fighting reality. And a lot of times you need to just say, it's like this. And it helps you kind of move back from the situation and respond to it better.
That's so really good.
I thought it was really good. And I did a very poor job, everybody, of sharing that story. She's beautiful in the way she does it. But I was just thinking, that's the way we need to view when people are sharing stories is it's like this and not try to put it in my organization, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's right. Because we tend to do that, filter everything through. It's human nature, I think. We want to filter things through our background because that's all we know.
Right.
But we're not really being very good listeners when we do that.
Spot on, Kim. Spot on. Because it's like we are filing it. We're trying to figure out how to file it in our system and make sense of it instead of just listening.
Mm-hmm. And I want to fix it.
Oh, yeah.
I want to fix everything for everybody.
And you know, I think also in that book, she was talking about her teenager, you know, calling and crying because she was having issues with her girlfriend group or whatever and not fitting in. And she just, her one of her best friends just prompted her to say, oh, well, is that it? Or do you have anything else to say? Or she would just kind of restate what the girl said. Mm-hmm. And she was just kind of like, I don't know if my word is affirm. Just kind of confirming that she heard it, I guess I should say. You know, by restating like, oh, that, I think that probably hurt your feelings by what you're saying that so and so did this.
Yeah.
And
that's practicing empathy too.
Yes. Yes. And she just would say, oh, and what else? And, you know, how are you feeling? She just kind of asked questions like that. And then the girl was like, all right, I got to go. And it was, she just needed somebody to she didn't want somebody fixing her problem. Mm-hmm. She didn't need somebody to fix her problem. She just needed to share her story.
Mm-hmm. She just needed somebody to listen. Yeah. Because getting it out sometimes is just cathartic. You know, you just need to get it out.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we don't want somebody solving the problem for us, you know? Maybe
offering. I might not like the way they solve it.
Right. Offering advice or, but I think so many times we just need to talk.
Mm-hmm.
So she says that we need to honor the sacred nature of story, knowing that we've been entrusted with something valuable or that we have something valuable that we should treat with respect and care. And I thought that was so good because I know we get overwhelmed with hearing stuff at school, but these kids have so much to share and so much more that they need to share. And I think the more we can honor, the better the connection's going to be.
I think so too. Oh, they'll feel valued and they'll feel safe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And using this at home, you know, I just, like, all the stuff I'm learning, I'm practicing on my kids because that's who I have access to all the time. And it just really makes a difference. It really does. Okay, some things that I want to share with you that get in the way of honoring story, and boy, these hit me hard, Kim, is a narrative takeover and a narrative tap out. So we're going to go through these, but those two things, so a story takeover, let's say that Kim, you know, is sharing something and I take over or I tap out. What I'm doing is really breaking the connection. And, you know, that's probably not going to hurt our friendship tremendously because we've been friends for so many years, but it will nudge away at our connections if I continue this practice. And boy, did I realize I've been doing it. So
you don't do it with me.
But I think that's kind of a pattern that I do. And let's explain it and then we'll talk about it more.
Okay.
How about that?
Okay.
Okay. So she says, Brené Brown says, narrative takeover is a huge problem in our world. It impacts one-on-one conversations. Rather than being good stewards of story, we hijack the story and center ourselves. That centering takes many different shapes, including shifting the focus to us, questioning or not believing what is shared because it's different than our lived experience, or diminishing the importance of an experience because it makes us feel uncomfortable or worse or complicit. When we reject the truth of someone's story, the ultimate failure of story stewardship, it's often because we stealthily centered ourselves in their story. Okay, so let's give an example. So in this section of the book, she has a little cartoon, and it's about two ladies in an office, and one I think is like in a boss role, and the other one walks in, and the boss says, "Oh, how did your presentation go?" And the girl says, "It's okay." And the boss says, "Why just okay?" And the girl says, "I stayed up all night for it. This was my big moment, and it just didn't feel right." And she kind of shares something that happened in the presentation. And a narrative takeover, here's the example. The boss says, "Well, it sounds like you might be a little sensitive. Do you think you're exaggerating? I'm sure you did a great job. Even I get sensitive after a big moment." So boom, there's just a little shift to me.
Yes.
And then she's
shaping it.
She's shaping it. Like, "Oh, you're being sensitive." Like that, I'm fitting it in the box saying you're being sensitive, right. You know, and you must be exaggerating. And then she continues to say, "Oh, you know, the team didn't treat you right. We're going to have a come to Jesus meeting because no one's going to treat people on my team like that. And I'm with you, sister." And so it goes straight into what we did last week, controlling the path. Like, I'm going to do this.
Yes.
So let's try to think of some other examples of a narrative takeover. When
I think we do it all the time.
I do it all the time.
I think we all do. We say, oh, you know what? That same thing happened to me when I was your age. Or instead of just saying, oh, I hear you say, or man, right. That really must have hurt your feelings. I'm sorry that happened.
Mm-hmm. I noticed with my teenager, I do this a lot because I don't want him to hurt or struggle. And so I take it and I shift it to me or something I know that, you know, happened to my husband. So I'm trying to help him feel better, but I'm taking over the story and making it not about him anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I really think as teachers, that's really easy for us to fall into that trap for a lot of reasons. Because we want to help. Teachers are good-willed people who want to help children. That's why we got into this business. And also because we are pressed for time.
Oh, for sure.
And we're like, okay, well, you know what? That's terrible. I'm sorry that happened. Asking my need, you know, or whatever. My friends got mad at me when I was your age. It will get better. Yeah. Let's get started
go
on
back
math.
And play. Yeah. So true, Kim. I just think we can be, now that like we've become aware of it, we can see that if we, this is our pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is, we can just make those gentle shifts of saying, tell me more, what else, you know, or just repeating what they're saying. And oh, for sure, it's hard on time. But when we can, and especially at home. Thinking about this.
For sure. And if my situation is a little bit different, I think, because I do have small groups of children. Mm-hmm. I don't have 25 in here at a time. I have between 5 and 7, and I can take a minute.
Yeah. And gosh.
It's such a blessing.
Precious. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Absolutely. It is a blessing to be able to do that. The other one is the tap out. So talk to us about the narrative tap out.
Okay. So the tap out can range from being, she says, from being a subtle disinterest to complete shutdowns. She says if they had thought bubbles, it would be like, this is too comfortable, or I don't care enough about you to care about this. Or mm-hmm. I can't take this on right now.
Mm-hmm. I've got my own stuff.
Yeah. I've got my own stuff. And she says we can tap out of our own stories too. So, and she says often this is all about having a lack of grounded confidence. So when we're thinking about an event that happened or a reaction or something that's happened in our lives, we may just tap out of it because we're not going to be curious about it. We're going to armor up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, whoa, when I read that.
I know. And I tell myself, you are just overreacting. It's not that bad.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about it. Mm-hmm. So let's go back to that example of the boss and the girl. You know, her presentation was just okay. She stayed up all night and it just didn't feel right. A tap out would be the boss says, oh, I'm sure it was great. Hey, when's our next meeting? And she says it diminishes the story. And right there, you can see that. I think that's a great example of it.
It is a great example.
Another one would be like she's sharing that she just didn't feel good, you know, about the presentation. And the narrative tap out's like, oh, yeah, sometimes we feel like that when we give talks. So I'll see you at the next meeting. You know, just kind of like summarizing something probably pretty big in one sentence and tapping out.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Some
issues that need handling around storytelling is being the knower. Or the advice giver, or the problem solver.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, I think, as adults working with young people, we tend to want to be the knower or the advice giver instead of just letting them have their story. and just and listening.
I think we do that because we want to help.
We do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think so
too.
And so maybe after we listen, maybe even saying, would you like advice? Or would you, you know, even offering them the opportunity to hear advice. And if they don't, no, I just wanted to talk it out, then boom, we're done.
Yes, I had that experience as a literacy coach once. A teacher came to me with an issue and I said, well, we could try X, Y, and Z. No, that won't work because, and then she went into another little issue. And then I said, well, maybe if we tried this. And then finally I just realized, and I said, do you want to problem solve this or did you just want to vent? And she just wanted to vent.
Yeah.
She just needed to talk it out.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Laura, I know this is true for myself. I think sometimes if we let people have their story and have a chance to talk it out, they will work it out in their head the best way that's for them, not the best way for us, the way we would do it, but what's best for them in their situation. I know this is true in journaling. A lot of times, especially if I'm testing kids and I start to write out what I'm observing, it all kind of falls into place for me.
Uh-huh.
And when I do that, and I think that probably is true just after reading this, that when we give people a chance to just have their story and talk it through, they'll come to an epiphany maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
About how they need to work that out. Or maybe they'll just feel better for having said it.
I think so. Yeah. Let's wrap this up because I think, I just think this is great to wrap it up. So
okay. At
the end of Brené's book, she's shares kind of like a conclusion and she goes back to talking about her mother and she says, she taught us to never look away from pain. The lesson was simple and clear. Don't look away. Don't look down. Don't pretend not to see hurt. Look people in the eye, even when their pain is overwhelming. And when you're hurting and in pain, find the people who can look you in the eye.
Mm.
We need to know that we're not alone, especially when we're hurting. And I just thought about this, like if we can model this and make this part of our classroom culture to help our kids not look away from each other when they're hurting or not to look down, like just how much better our classroom will be and how much better we will be at the end of the year.
Oh, so much better. That is so good.
So good. And I do think we do this, you know, when someone's going through a hard time, and even if it's just a little bit of a hard time, you know, like somebody drops their tray in the cafeteria, look away, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to read it one more time just because I want people to remember it.
Yeah. One more time, please.
Don't look away. Don't look down. Don't pretend not to see hurt. Look people in the eye, even when their pain is overwhelming. And when you're hurting and in pain, find the people who can look you in the eye. We need to know that we're not alone, especially when we're hurting. So these three skills that we've been talking about over the past 3 weeks is about learning and improving, learning and growing, staying curious. Number two, walking alongside someone. Walking alongside ourselves, I think, is a big one. You know, not being judgy, not taking power, not controlling the path. And then this last one, just honoring story and really just truly listening. And, you know, as I've been reading all this stuff in these other books, I've been thinking about so many times, you know, we may not enjoy the teacher down the hall or whatever. And I think if we can just talk to them more and more and get to know their stories, we'll see that we do have a lot more in common.
There's probably a lot there that would explain things to us. Oh. I think this is so good. In Arkansas, the second cause of death of young people is suicide. the number two cause of death in the state of Arkansas for kids between the ages of 12 and 20, I think, or 22.
Wow.
Is suicide. And I think we have got to, as people who work with young people, validate them, walk alongside them, be with them, empathize with them, and let them and share their story.
Yeah.
Because they need us.
Oh, they do need us. And I just think about Charlotte Danielson's work and framework for teaching, you know, that last category of being, I always say advanced, but it's not advanced, distinguished, is that your kids do that, you know, without you. And so I think, just think about it. If you're not the only person in the room who is not looking away, who is truly listening, who is doing all these things, and you have 30 people or 152 people doing these things, you will start to, you will turn the tide in your room and in your school.
I think so too. Change the culture.
Change the culture. And really, I know it's like a big weight on us, but we can do that. And you can do that in just 50 minutes or 42, whatever you got a day. If you see your kids on a regular basis, you can turn the tides. So
you sure can. That's good stuff, Laura.
Yeah, it is so good, such good. Kim and I really encourage you to read this Atlas of the Heart book or something. You know, if this is not your style. Something about emotions. I've not read Jenny Allen's new book, Untangle Your Emotions, but it's on my list. But I know, we just know of Brené Brown as a leading researcher on vulnerability and connection and things like that. Mm-hmm. So that's why we use her book.
I think so. And I think it is so appropriate for us as educators because that's nothing else matters.
No, yeah.
Nothing else matters if we don't have that relationship and that connection with our students.
For sure. And as parents and as spouses and as friends and as, you know, it all goes back to relationships. Yeah. So, okay. Thanks for going deep with us.
So we're going to have to close out.
All right. Well, as always, thanks for listening. And we look forward to seeing you next time.
Okay. See you next time. Bye. Bye-bye.